Your key to a good performance is the development of test-taking skills for the oral board exam. These skills are essential for oral board candidates. Many of those who had previously failed the exam and subsequently learned these skills went on to pass it the next time around. In the next 20 minutes, I'm going to teach you rules and strategies to use as you take the exam. There are 4 rules and 4 strategies for you to learn. When I use the word rule, I mean something you must do all the time. If I use the word strategy, I'm referring to something you can do when confronted with a problem. The 4 strategies I will give you are, in my opinion, the ones you will need to know to effectively deal with the problems you may be confronted with during the oral board exam process. First, I'm going to enumerate the rules and strategies, and then I'm going to explain how to use them. Here are the 4 rules. Rule number 1. All patients with abnormal vital signs or an altered level of consciousness require immediate stabilization. Rule number 2. If you are dealing with potentially serious illnesses or injuries, be aggressive in your management. Rule number 3. Take the lead. Take control of the case yourself. And rule number 4. Never let up on your concentration. Now, here are the 4 strategies. Strategy number 1. If you feel intimidated by an examiner, deal with this feeling. Failure to do so may adversely affect your performance. Strategy number 2. In the early part of the case, if a patient is not responding to usual stabilization or therapeutic measures, you have missed an important clue. You need to methodically retrace the case and look for that clue. Strategy number 3. If a suspected diagnosis is not materializing, your differential diagnosis is incomplete. Review the clinical presentation again and develop a good working differential diagnosis. And strategy number 4. If you make a mistake during the exam, admit it openly and declare your intent to correct it immediately. Please keep in mind that these rules and strategies should be learned and practiced before you take the exam. They should not be the focus of case management during the exam, but rather tucked in the back of your mind, ready to use as needed. The reason I mention this is that some candidates try to use test-taking skills as props for case management, rather than relying on their clinical skills to direct patient care. Many candidates use a number of mnemonics and diagrams for reference during case management. This technique has been perceived by some examiners as a crutch to lean on, for fear of mismanaging the case. It also takes time to write down all the mnemonics and diagrams. As a result, the examiners no longer allow you to write on the paper before they present the case. This is not a problem if you use the 6-square format or Dr. Weber's alternative format, both of which are described in the text. Listen to the examiner as he presents the case. Read the card he gives you, then write down your format, and don't worry about the time. When you use an organized approach, it takes only 11 minutes to manage a case. Now here's why the rules and strategies are important. Taking this exam is like playing a board game. The examiner opens, then you make a move, then he makes a move, and so on. While I use the analogy of a game to demonstrate my point, I do not mean to insinuate that the oral board exam is a game. It most certainly is not. But the exam process, the way the oral exam is conducted, is so similar to playing a board game that the analogy cannot be ignored. This is the oral board environment. Now let's proceed to a discussion of the rules and strategies. In learning a board game, you first have to learn how to play or what the rules are, and then you have to learn the strategies needed to play well. I will cover the rules first. To make them as clear as possible, I will follow the usual sequence of case management. As with many board games, the first move is often crucial. For example, If the examiner opens with a 29-year-old male involved in an auto accident with a blood pressure of 90 over 60, pulse 120, and respirations 10, your first move is important. In this case, that move must be the following: immediate stabilization with C-spine immobilization, ABC assessment, airway management, and an IV, O2 with pulse ox, and monitor, followed by appropriate shock management. You could, of course, make a number of wrong first moves. Here are some examples: asking how the accident occurred, or evaluating a monitor strip, or starting a central line prior to airway management. While these are important points in the overall management of the patient, they are inappropriate first moves. Your patient's condition could be deteriorating, and none of these moves would correct it. Now let's alter this clinical scenario a bit. What if this auto accident victim had stable vital signs but an altered level of consciousness? Would your first move be different? No, it would not. Let me give you some reasons why. Cervical spine fractures do not alter the vital signs unless there is transection of the spinal cord. In patients with early bleeding and/or head injuries, the blood pressure and pulse are often normal initially. An airway assessment is always indicated in a patient with an altered level of consciousness. Therefore, the first rule is, all patients with abnormal vital signs or an altered level of consciousness require immediate stabilization. If the patient is a trauma victim, this includes C-spine immobilization. If the patient is not a trauma victim, this includes drawing blood for analysis, administering a bolus of glucose, and possibly Narcan and thiamine, depending on the clinical presentation. All patients with altered vital signs and/or an altered level of consciousness require an IV, O2, and monitor. Now, take the same auto accident victim, but this time, let's say he has stable vital signs and he's also alert and oriented. What would your first move be? If your trauma patient is awake, alert, with normal vital signs, you are likely to be given additional information in the opening scenario that will provide clues. Here's an example. Your patient is a 29-year-old male involved in an auto accident. He complains of pain in his abdomen and right thigh. His vital signs are blood pressure 118 over 70, pulse 80, and respiration 16. Intra-abdominal injury and a femoral fracture are distinct possibilities in this scenario. Because the potential for clinical deterioration is high, aggressive management is indicated. Stabilize this patient with an IV, O2, and monitor. Be sure to conduct an ABC assessment and immobilize the cervical spine. Order a portable lateral C-spine film and then focus your attention on the abdomen and thigh to determine if aggressive fluid management is indicated. This brings us to the second rule, which is this. If you think you may be dealing with a potentially serious illness or injury, be aggressive. Otherwise, your patient's clinical condition will deteriorate. That is not to say that if your patient runs a downhill course, you did something wrong. Some cases are designed with a built-in arrest or some other end-stage condition. But if you do not provide timely management with a serious problem, your patient will not do well. Almost all of the trauma patients presented at this exam have multiple injuries, and they require early stabilization and aggressive management. Occasionally, a single isolated injury is presented, such as a wrist or elbow injury. These, of course, do not require aggressive stabilization measures. However, they may require aggressive management if there is neurovascular compromise. Always check skin color, pulses, and sensory motor function. The same two rules apply to acute medical and surgical emergencies. All patients with abnormal vital signs, an altered level of consciousness, or suspected serious illness require early stabilization with at least an IV, O2, and monitor, as well as appropriate aggressive management efforts. I realize this may sound very basic to you, but I have found that if a candidate is going to have trouble, this is where it usually is, at the very beginning of the case. Because you cannot see these patients, And because you are used to having nurses and EMTs initiate stabilization measures, this important first step may be overlooked or inadequately managed in the oral exam environment. The first step in the initial evaluation of any patient is to determine the need for stabilization measures. The second step is to find out what's wrong while at the same time preventing clinical decompensation. At this point, you may experience a sense of urgency due to time constraints. This is a common problem because you are managing a patient in 15 minutes that would normally be managed in the emergency department over an hour or more. This is where application of the mental rehearsal technique can be very valuable. If you have a case management outline etched in your mind that you have rehearsed repeatedly before the exam, you will not be aware of the time constraints because you will be moving from one step to the next without any delays or interruptions. Here's the outline I used for unstable patients. You'll find it in the back of the text under Additional Tips for Good Performance. It consists of 10 steps. 1. Initial stabilization. 2. Brief history and physical exam. 3. Initial lab orders. 4. Specific treatment as indicated. 5. Complete history and physical. 6. Diagnostic impression. 7. Additional diagnostic studies. 8. Specialty consultation as needed. 9. Final stabilization and treatment. And 10. Final disposition. Once you have a case management outline, rehearse it over and over again until you have it down cold. Then practice using it, first on your patients in the emergency department, and then during an oral board simulation or private tutorial. It also helps to make up your own cases and imagine using your outline. When you have rehearsed and practiced the outline for several days, you will find yourself using it automatically, which is exactly what you want to have happen on exam day. If, for some reason, your concentration is broken during an exam encounter, stop right there and remind yourself that you have a case management outline and get back into it immediately. That brings us to rule number 3, which is take the lead. Take control of the case yourself. Do not allow the examiner to take the lead, and don't wait for him to prompt you. He wants you to direct the case. It makes his job easier and your performance better. A well-defined case management outline is the tool you need to take control. As you proceed step by step through the case, using your outline, you will be directing case management in a timely fashion. By the time you have finished a complete physical exam, some lab and x-rays will start to come back. Pieces of the puzzle will begin coming together now, and you will begin to feel relieved. This is a critical point in case management because it is where a mistake is easily made. In his elation over the discovery of a diagnosis, the candidate relaxes. In doing so, he attempts to wrap up the case quickly and falls into one of two traps. He forgets that there may be another diagnosis or, in his haste, does not finalize the case properly. For example, let's say your patient is an alcoholic who was found lying in the street. He responds only to painful stimuli and emits a strong odor of alcohol. You perform an ABC assessment, start an IV, and put him on oxygen and a monitor. Blood samples are sent to the lab for analysis, and you administer glucose, Narcan, and thiamine. He wakes up, and his blood sugar comes back with a reading of 30 milligrams per cent. You've now converted his stupor state to one in which he is fully alert, agitated, and combative. And he wants to leave. If you let him do so before completely examining him, you've lost the case. It may turn out that he has other problems, such as multiple rib fractures and a small pneumothorax. Another example that demonstrates how easily a mistake can be made once the diagnosis is established is this. You have a patient with multiple injuries, let's say a basilar skull fracture, pneumothorax, and a compound leg fracture. You've ordered a CT, which is negative for intracranial hematoma. a thoracostomy has been done, and the leg has been appropriately evaluated, dressed, splinted, and bleeding controlled. All the surgeons have been contacted, neuro, chest, and orthopedic, and then you forget to order tetanus prophylaxis and an IV antibiotic before finishing the case. If these are critical actions, you may fail this case encounter. Therefore, the fourth rule is, never let up on your concentration. Never, never let up on your concentration. Let's review again the four rules for a good performance at the oral board exam. Rule number one, all patients with abnormal vital signs or an altered level of consciousness require immediate stabilization. Rule number two, if you are dealing with potentially serious illnesses or injuries, be aggressive in your management of these conditions. Rule number three, take the lead. Take control of the case yourself. And rule number four, never let up on your concentration. Now let's consider the four strategies. Again, I will present them in the sequence they are likely to occur. The first strategy is to deal with intimidation, since it can affect your performance. Let's say you've entered the room and come face to face with your examiner. Your first problem may be what to do if you feel intimidated. Intimidation during the oral board exam does not occur very often, but it has happened to some candidates. It can affect your performance only if you accept the problem as one without a solution. Intimidation in this type of setting will present itself in one of two ways. First, that which is apparent, and second, that which is real. In other words, there is the intimidation perceived by you as a sense of superiority or authority of the examiner over you, and then there is actual intimidation projected from the examiner to you. In either case, there is a way to deal with this problem. What I'm about to say may sound a little strange to you. However, it is a tactic that has been successfully used by businessmen and women during interviews with top corporate executives. If you feel intimidated during your oral exam process, imagine that your examiner is wearing a Halloween costume. This will alter your perception of him or her, which will tend to dissipate the effect of the intimidation. Once you have done this, then look down at your notes, which is now your patient, and concentrate on your case management. Most importantly, do not look at the examiner. Keep your eyes on your paper or props, such as ECG, X-rays, etc. Focus on the case, not the examiner. This is the first strategy for maximizing your performance in an oral exam environment. Deal with intimidation. If you feel intimidated, and do not confront it, your performance may be adversely affected. Strategy number two deals with the situation where the patient is not responding to your stabilization or therapeutic measures. In this case, you've missed an important clue. Now, how do you know you've missed a clue? Well, let's talk about this for a moment. Within the first few minutes of case management, you will have become aware of a ping-pong effect that is taking place between you and the examiner. It will go something like this. Candidate, is the patient having difficulty breathing? Examiner, he is splinting his right side and says it's hard to breathe. Candidate, are breath sounds diminished on that side? Examiner, yes they are. Candidate, I want to put in a chest tube. Examiner, explain the procedure. And so on. After you've stabilized the patient, the ping-pong volley will resume. Here's an example. Examiner, the X-ray tech is about ready to go to lunch. Do you want any films now? Candidate, I'd like a lateral C-spine and chest film taken. Examiner, can the patient go to the X-ray department? Candidate, no, those films should be portable. Examiner, you ask the nurse to draw blood before starting the IV. She wants to know what to do with it. And so on. This volleying back and forth between you and the examiner is normal and is usually as rhythmic as a metronome. When present, it's a sign that things are going well. However, if you have missed something in the history or physical exam, or you haven't done something that should have been done, this back and forth volley will slow down and develop an irregular rhythm. Here are some examples. Let's say you have a trauma patient who is not responding to usual stabilization or therapeutic measures. The volley may slow down as the examiner waits for you to initiate an appropriate action. In this case, an important clue is missing. You need to methodically retrace the case from the beginning and find that clue. It's probably something you missed at the beginning of the case, within the first couple of minutes or so. You may have missed something in the initial assessment. In the case of the trauma victim, any immediate life-threatening injuries should have been diagnosed and treated during the ABC assessment. Here are seven examples. Upper airway obstruction, a pneumothorax or large hemothorax, sucking chest wound or flail chest, cardiac tamponade, hypovolemic shock, acute epidural hematoma, and major vascular bleeding. Did you rule out these conditions? If you did, then the missing clue is probably further on in the case. How about the history? Was all pertinent information obtained? For example, how did the accident occur? Were any drugs or alcohol ingested? Does the patient have any known allergies? And be sure to check for a medical alert tag at the neck and wrists. And if possible, ascertain any medications he is taking. In the case of a medical or surgical emergency, where more information is needed, did you order initial stat lab, talk to significant others, perform a complete physical exam, and then order additional lab and x-rays as indicated? Here's another example. If you are managing an upper GI bleed in the usual fashion, and your patient doesn't respond to your therapeutic measures, the examiner will begin to prod you with questions or comments that don't seem to fit in. Listen to him. He's giving you clues as to what is missing or needs to be done. If you can't figure out what it is, go back and retrace what has happened and what you have done. Look at your notes. That's your patient. Decode the initial presentation again. You may see something you didn't see before. Keep tracking all the way through the case until you find it. And you will find it. Stay calm. Take a deep breath and tell yourself, I will find it. In the case of the GI bleeder, a roommate you overlooked before is holding key information. The patient is a CCU nurse with depression. She had been observed taking Coumadin pills from the unit last night. Administration of fresh frozen plasma and vitamin K1 now results in clinical improvement. This is strategy number two. If you are in trouble, methodical retracing is the answer. Before I go on to the next strategy, I want to add a comment about the ping-pong nature of the exam. Some physicians have written or called me to say that sometimes this does not occur at the exam. They went on to say that occasionally an examiner was conspicuously silent after he opened the case, making few or no comments while the candidate managed the case. If you encounter an examiner who doesn't play ping-pong with you, don't worry about it. Just manage the case. I can assure you, though, that if you have missed something or haven't done something that you should have, the examiner will say something. In some way, he will indicate that something you need to know has not been uncovered or that something you need to do has yet to be done. You will find out what it is by methodically retracing the case. The third strategy comes into play when you are dealing with a patient in whom the working diagnosis isn't materializing, and you're not sure what to do. This one happened to me in a tutorial session before my exam, and fortunately, I learned from it. The case involved a middle-aged man who presented with sudden onset of sore throat. I was unable to adequately examine his pharynx because I was told that his tongue was rolling around. Instead of pursuing that, I began to do other things that just confused the picture. I knew I was headed down the wrong track, but I didn't know what to do about it. My instructor finally stopped me and said, "You are making two mistakes. You don't have a good working differential diagnosis, and you are forgetting the chief complaint." This was true. The chief complaint was a sore throat. The instructor had made examination of the pharynx difficult on purpose. She wanted to see how I would solve this problem. And rather than solving it, I began examining other areas. In doing so, I found that he had a history of congestive heart failure and I pursued that instead. What I should have done was focus on the chief complaint of sore throat, listing possible causes on my paper, such as pharyngitis, foreign body, abscess, and epiglottitis, and then attempt to examine his throat by indirect laryngoscopy and/or a soft tissue lateral film of the neck. Had I done so, the diagnosis of epiglottitis would have become apparent. A similar problem occurred to another emergency physician who was presented with a young woman in status epilepticus. In the initial clinical presentation, he was told that she was pregnant, but in the course of managing the case, he forgot that she was pregnant. He hadn't focused on the clinical presentation at the beginning of the case, so he didn't have eclampsia in his differential diagnosis. If you think these errors are ridiculous mistakes, ones that you would never make, remember this. You are assessing these cases in an artificial environment. You don't see the middle-aged man sitting on a cart, leaning forward, and rubbing his Adam's apple. And you are not looking at a woman on a cart with an obvious gravid uterus clearly in view. You are hearing about these patients, not seeing them. Strategy number 3, then, is this. If a suspected diagnosis is not materializing, your differential diagnosis is incomplete. Review the clinical presentation and develop a good working differential diagnosis. The 4th strategy you may need to use during the oral board exam centers around this problem. What should you do if you know you have made a mistake? This one usually occurs toward the end of the case and is frequently the result of finalizing case management too quickly. A good example is the multiple injured patient in whom you suspect an intra-abdominal injury. You are finishing the case, you have the surgeon on the phone, and suddenly you realize that you didn't do portable ultrasonography as part of your abdominal exam. If this happens, acknowledge the fact immediately. Tell the examiner that you forgot to do it and that it should be done. The examiner will do one of two things. He'll either give you the opportunity to go back and do it, or he will reprimand you, probably through the surgeon, for not doing it. In either case, I do not believe you will fail the case encounter, although your score may be lowered somewhat. This is the final and 4th strategy. If you make a mistake, admit it openly and declare your intent to correct it immediately. Now let's recap the information I've given you and delineate the salient points for you to consider as you plan your approach to this exam. To assure the delivery of good clinical skills, you must have academic knowledge, common sense, and self-confidence. The book and CDs in the program provide your academic review. Common sense, that is, the ability to think clearly, is achieved by focusing on the patient, not the environment, and staying with your management plan. Self-confidence is attained through mental and physical simulation. If you decide to use it, practice mental simulation every day. Practice physical simulation through an oral board course or private tutorial. To acquire test-taking skills for the oral board exam, learn the 4 rules and the 4 strategies employed by successful candidates. The 4 rules are: 1. All patients with abnormal vital signs or an altered level of consciousness require immediate stabilization. 2. If you think you are dealing with a potentially serious illness or injury, be aggressive in your management. Early stabilization is in order. 3. Take the lead. Take control of the case yourself. And 4. Never let up on your concentration. Do not relax until you hear the examiner say that the case is over. The 4 strategies are: 1. Deal with intimidation. If you feel intimidated and do not confront it, your performance may be adversely affected. 2. If the ping pong volley suddenly slows down or becomes erratic, something's wrong. Methodical retracing through the case is the answer. You will uncover the error or omission with this method. 3. If a suspected diagnosis is not materializing, something important is missing. Review the clinical presentation again and develop a good working differential diagnosis. And 4, if you make a mistake, admit it openly and declare your intent to correct it immediately. You are now ready to design a study and preparation schedule tailored to your specific needs. Begin by outlining the tasks to be done. First, determine how much time you will spend reading the book, listening to the CDs, and practicing case management through simulation. Next, set up a daily schedule for the first week, writing down the times you have scheduled for reading, listening, and rehearsing. Do the same thing for the second week, making any adjustments you feel are necessary. Continue in this fashion, scheduling your activities on a weekly basis. Make sure you have allotted time before the exam for a physical simulation. Now you are ready to begin. Do not allow the size of the task to intimidate you. As the Chinese say, a journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step. Your first step is setting your daily schedule. Each day will be another stride toward your final goal, passing the oral board exam. The discipline you learn along the way will carry you through the final steps. You are now ready to begin your journey, and I know when you arrive at the oral board exam, you will be prepared to meet the challenge. The course you are about to map out is your path to success. This is the end of the introductory CD.